of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome back. This is it, Canada's only holistic political chat. It's Wednesday. It's after 6 o'clock. We ask you, the listeners, to consider this. And joining us in the studio, always my co-host, my community producer, Rob Washburn, is here this afternoon. And joining us is Lambert Reed and Daniel Casada, who is the community outreach officer for Horizons of Friendship. And great to have them here. We're going to be talking about migrant workers. We're going to be talking about Lambert Reed in particular. He has been coming to this community since 1982. And he has made Coburg his home. That's a wonderful thing. One of the things, Daniel, and we've asked you a number of times when you've been in here, is like, what are the chances of a migrant worker, you know, coming here, being able to get through the hoops and the red tape to stay here? And obviously Lambert has managed to dodge all of that, get around it. I don't know how he's done it. He's going to tell us his secret, what magic codes he had to use. In the meantime, before we get to the conversation, here's Murray McLaughlin and the Farmer's Song on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Dusty old farmer, out working your field, hanging down over your tractor wheel. The sun beating down turned the red paint to orange, and rusty old patches of steel. There's no farmer songs on that car radio, just cowboys, truck drivers, and pain. Well, this is my way to say thanks for the meal, and I hope there's no shortage of rain. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Well, the combines gang up and take most of the bread. Things just ain't like they used to be. Though your kids are out after the American dream, and they're working in big factories. If I come by when you're out in the sun, can I wave at you just like a friend? These days when everyone's taking so much, there's somebody giving back in. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you.
Okay.
Welcome to the broadcast. As I say, joining us in the studio, and that was Murray McLaughlin, by the way, in the Farmer's Song. Classic 1972. Lambert Reed, who is with us today, and Daniel Quesada, who is from Horizons of Friendship. Now, last time we had you in here, Daniel, we talked to you about, you know, the possibility of getting some migrant workers to come in and talk about their situation and what life has been like for them or what life is for them on a daily basis. Very difficult to do that, though, especially when they're working. You know, on good days, they're out there working.
Exactly, yeah.
On bad days, very difficult to get them here.
Yeah, for sure. Like, as you mentioned, it's very difficult for a migrant worker to become a permanent resident or to become a Canadian citizen. I've met hundreds of migrant workers, and the only one I've ever met that's become a Canadian citizen is sitting right next to me, and that's Lambert.
Wow. Welcome. That's amazing. All right. Now, is that your situation as well? Have you met any others who've worked here as migrant workers and decided, you know, I'm going to stay here? How many other people do you know that are in your situation?
Well, I knew a few that decided to stay here in Canada and make their home here because, you know, Canada is a really nice country. And it's a struggle because you have those criminal lawyers that you have to be dealing with, and
right.
They just want to take you for granted and just take you for a ride. And because they know the situation and you wanted to stay here and you'll do anything, I mean, you know, to stay, they would take, like, name you any price. And then when you give them your money, your hard-earned money, they don't know nothing for you.
Is that the biggest struggle?
Yes, so you have to be really, really careful.
Now, how did you manage to get lucky then? Or did you get burned a few times yourself?
I get burned like 3 times.
Wow.
And but I still decided I'm not giving up because I love Canada and it's a beautiful country. It's the best place to live in the earth. And I decided I'm not giving up. And regardless of the struggle and what it cost me everything. And I just decided to go through, and, you know, I'm the kind of person, I'm really determined. Once I set my mind on something and I want this, I work towards it.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to get your citizenship, process?
Well, you're in the process right now, right?
No, I'm done now.
Oh, you are done? Okay.
Oh, yes. I started back in 08 because why I really decided to stay too is because my daughter was going to med school at the time. And going back and forth, it was really difficult for me to come up with all that money and to help her as I want to. So I decided I'm going to stay, and that way I can, you know, earn more money to help her.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to stay. And then the first thing, I went to Toronto at Sheppard Avenue to see a lawyer. Somebody told me about him, and I went there. And it took like $1,500 for me just like that. When are you going to bring me some more money? When you didn't have done nothing for me yet. And I already give you $1,500. Believe you me, he didn't even sign a piece of paper for me. Nothing.
So what did you get for the $1,500?
Nothing.
Wow.
So then what happened next? What was the next attempt that you made?
And then I keep trying on my own to do the application and to put it in. And then I keep getting denied. So I decide to see another lawyer, and then I tried this other lawyer. She charged me like $10,000.
Wow.
$10,000.
And she didn't do anything either.
And she didn't do nothing either.
Wow.
And then she said, I've been denied again. And then she said, okay, you have a strong case. I said, but you just got me denied. I just paid you $10,000 and you got me denied. Why you didn't do it then? Why you're telling me if you come up with another $10,000, I can help you this time? I said, you just get me denied. How can I give you another $10,000 when you done nothing for me? So I said, look, I would like my file. And she said, okay, if you give me $5,000 to show you all these people are criminal, if you give me $5,000, right away she cut it in half when she realized I'm not going to buy for it.
Was there some recourse that you could take? I mean, this was obviously, you were defrauded. I mean,
yeah.
What do you do in that situation, though? I guess you just got to take it.
Yeah. Wow. And I go through all of this, and, you know, at one point they asked me to go to Humber College in Toronto. I have to pay like over almost $500 to prove that I speak English, which it's nonsense because the first word, I'm a Jamaican.
Yeah.
I'm a Commonwealth.
Yes.
The first word we speak is English. And I have to go down there to prove that I speak English.
Oh, my God.
So in the end, how much did it cost you to get this done?
And then I somebody told me about this other consultant again. They're not lawyers. They are consultants.
That's right.
And this guy charged me like right off the bat, okay, come up with $4,000 and I can help you. Mm-hmm. And I went into my RSP. I got a little money in my RSP, which I've been saving, you know, trying to save. And I went in there and draw the money at the bank. They asked me all kind of questions that day because, why are you taking out your money? Why are you doing this? And I said, I got to do this. And I don't want to be a problem to anyone by borrowing money from nobody. So I said, I've got to do this. So I went and I got the money and I took it to him. And he wasn't doing nothing for me.
So after wasting close to $20,000,
yes,
how did you finally find someone that wasn't stealing from you?
That's when I went to the Member of Parliament office in Coburg here.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And that was Rick Norlock?
Yes.
Okay. And he was there. He's like, okay, you know.
No, it was Kim.
Oh, it was Kim Ra?
Kim office, yes. Okay. Kim Ra, yes. And the guy there, what his name?
Jamie. Yeah.
He's a fine gentleman. He's the best person I ever met. He's a fine, fine gentleman. He's the one that helped me with this process and helped me with everything.
Yeah.
And because they were about to close my file. At the time when I went to him, they was about to close my file. And the lady, she spoke with him and they asked me for everything. And I tried to get a doctor because they asked me for a new doctor report.
Right.
And I couldn't find one in Coburg or around Toronto. So I had was to go. I called a friend of mine, just did their medical. And I called him and said, what about your doctor that you just went to? And that's over in Kitchener.
Wow.
And I called them and they said, yes, we have a cancellation. Can you come tomorrow? And I went in and I said, yes, I got to make it there. And I went over there. And
so when did you find out finally that you had your citizenship?
Well, when Jamie called me one day and said, well, you know, everything going to be okay and what have you and what have you. And I tried to provide everything so fast. And I went and borrowed a little money because by now I'm broke.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I borrow a little money and get to, because one of the lawyer, I gave him my PR card money, which is $490. He didn't pay it. I gave him my work permit money, which is over $600, $650. He didn't pay it. I gave him another $800 to take care of some other paperwork. He didn't pay it. So all of those money at the end of the time, when Jamie called me and we started to do this, there's nothing there. Yeah. There was nothing paid
for. So you had to pay all those things again.
I had to pay all of those money over again.
Wow.
Incredible.
Yes. So, and finally, we get everything in, and he called me one day. That's the best phone call I ever get.
That's amazing. You know what? This is, and I've talked about this on the show a bunch of times. We've read a number of stories in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
The government clamping down on these phony immigration consultants, and you know, and we hear about it so often, especially as we hear about the Syrian refugees that have come in here and they've had to deal with lots of people like that. But this, I think, this is the first time that, for the listeners anyway, where they get a firsthand account of just how much garbage you literally have to. I mean, these people stole just under $20,000 from you. Over $30,000 from you. No, not just in denial of service, but they didn't do anything for you. Also, you had that one guy who was basically stealing your money.
Yes.
These were permits that you had to pay in order to get legally eligible to work.
Yes.
All of those things, just stealing that money from you.
Yes.
Wow. So that is a headache you've been going through.
Yes,
for...
Yes, it's been a nightmare. It's been.
But it's over now.
It's over now. I can smile now and I can look back and, you know, I have my PR card in my pocket now and I can say, you know, thanks.
PR card is a permanent resident card, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, yes.
So that if anybody asks you for ID, that you're a Canadian citizen?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So that is amazing. Now, you've been coming here, as I said at the outset, since 1982.
82, yes. I started.
Can you tell us a bit about what that was like to come
well,
here?
To leave your family and to come to
just
Canada?
Even the first time, how did you find out about the job and then how did you get up here?
Well, back home in Jamaica, as a young man, we have our Member of Parliament, which we can go to and we can say, well, like sometimes they come in the area, in your community and have meeting. And if you can get a word in and say, well, look, you write your name down on a piece of paper. I'd like to go abroad on this, on the farm work program to help myself and can help my family and what have you. And they will take your name down and then they send you a thing, they call it a card. And then they will give you a date that you're going to do your medical. So I was fortunate. My brother went in and gave a couple of us name. Actually, three of us as brother went in and they take our name and then they send us the card and we went and did our medical. We went first. You have to do an interview,
right?
And you have to pass that.
So, what was your life like at that point in Jamaica? Tell us about your family.
Well, by that time, my mom passed away. My mom passed away back in 79, mm-hmm. September 1st, 1979. My mom passed away. She was a diabetic and she lost her leg amputated like three times. They start with two of her toes and then below her knees and then above her knee. And she didn't take that too well because she was a very active lady and she was the one that really put in the food on the table and see us through school and all of that and mm-hmm. what have you, because my daddy was away working in a different parish, or Provident, as you would say in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my mom used to shoulder all the burden, and when that happened, she didn't take it well, and then, you know, things start to go down, because by then, we actually have to drop out of school to try to provide, you know, for our home.
Right.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
It was 11 of us.
Wow.
But five of them didn't really grow up. I remember three of them died as a baby, mm-hmm. and other two, they passed away at an early age.
So how old were you then when your brother signed you up to...
We were 19.
You were 19.
18 going 19 at the time.
Do you remember that first time you came to Canada?
Oh, yes. I can't forget it. It was the 19th of August, 1982. And we get on that plane, we get on the bus in Toronto, in Jamaica, and then they took us to the airport. And back then, we didn't need a passport or a visa to come to Canada.
Right, yeah, because you're part of the Commonwealth.
It was just, exactly.
Yeah.
We were just a little piece of cardboard paper with one of your photograph in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And you come to Canada, and we get off in Toronto there, and there's a big school bus, and we get into it, and we have no clue where we're going.
Well, that's that was going to be my next question.
It's the first time in Canada.
So you're landing here. Next thing you know, you're loaded onto a bus.
Yes,
and it's like, you know, adventure begins.
Well, when you landed, you don't just walk out the airport. You just don't just go through immigration and walk out the airport. You have to go through a process there, eh? Because mm-hmm. they got to like process you and give you a paper so you can get your L card. And other stuff on your work visa mm-hmm. and everything. You get everything right there before you left the airport. And then you come outside and
where was that first farm? I'm curious where the first farm that you worked at.
The first farm was in Colburn there in Wicklow.
Okay.
Knights Hopper.
And okay. you were with them pretty much the whole time?
Yes, I worked with them for over 35 years.
Wow.
That is a place I worked for. All the years I've been coming to Canada.
35 years at the same place.
Over 35 years, the same place.
Wow. So you must have got to know the farm really well.
Oh,
probably
yes.
Better than some of the people who...
Inside out.
Exactly.
I know that place inside out.
So what was your first impression when you arrived? What was going through your mind?
Well, to be honest with you, that first day when I wake up, when we woke up and we come on, you know, like four or eight guys have to bunk together and you don't know these people. It's the first time we meet, you
yeah.
know. So you don't even know who you're going to live with. So like eight of us will go in there and this guy say, oh, I want the top bed. And the other guy will say that I want the bottom bunk and, you know, and stuff like that. Anyway, we settle in that night and they leave like little food and stuff in the house for us there in the bunk.
Mm-hmm.
And we make ourselves comfortable, whatever is there. And we go to bed. Next morning we wake up and the bus came again and they took us shopping. So we go to town and then it was the Met,
mm-hmm.
where Mr. Grocery used to be Mr. Grocery
yep.
and the Met.
Yep. Right.
That's where we went and shop, and you could get everything in there. You could get the food, your boot, and they kind of brief you what you should get to start.
Right, what you need.
What you need, eh?
Yep.
So, anyway, that day I cried. Honestly, I cried.
Wow.
Because it's the first time away, and I miss my family. And away from everybody,
yeah.
it's just new people, and I cried for
and
the first
crammed,
time.
And you're in the bunkhouse with a bunch of other guys.
With a bunch of other guys, and you know.
Who are in the same position as you, obviously.
Exactly. You know, we have no experience, nothing, and the first time we travel, and you know, and the new guys, they call us, they, you know.
Well, that's crazy. Well, we're going to get into more of that, okay. And more of what your first day was like and how you managed, because obviously you decided that you've been there 35 years. Obviously, there was something about that place that kept you anchored. So we'll talk to you about that in just a moment. We'll take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Lambert Reed and Daniel Caseta, who we haven't asked them a whole lot because we've really been fascinated, frankly, with Lambert's story. But we will be getting more information out to you listeners as well. We are talking about migrant workers here, and we're talking to Lambert Reed, who is now a permanent resident here in Canada. Congratulations to him, who lives here in Cobourg, by the way. We'll be back after the break.
I'm Chef Michelle.
I'm Chef Michael.
You don't have to be a chef to savor the flavors of Chef's Corner.
Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 to see who we've cooked up for our special guests, and don't forget our skill tasting giveaway.
Join Chef's Corner to tap into the upcoming culinary season and stir the gourmet in you. It's all about food, eating in season, and keeping it local. Chef's Corner, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m.
Here on Northumberland 89.7.
Truly local radio.
Complete your dream home the ViewTech way.
These are the plans for my dream house. It's going to be perfect if I find the right doors and windows.
Step into our showroom. You're going to love these wood products by Sierra Pacific.
ViewTech Window and Door offers Sierra Pacific products for long-lasting structural integrity, energy efficiency, and the beauty of wood.
These are dream house worthy.
That's the ViewTech way, and it's been that way for 25 years. For Sierra Pacific products, visit ViewTech Window and Door, Church Street at Station, Belleville.
Or call 1-800-893-5853.
The 2017 Toyota Factory Event is still on. Lease or finance from 0% plus $1,000 bonus cash on 2017 Corolla, Camry, and RAV4 LE front-wheel drive. Plus, you can get thousands of Aeroplan miles. It's all happening right now. So come on down to Vandermeer Toyota, 959 Division Street, Cobourg. Call 905-372-5437 or visit VandermeerToyota.com for details.
Northumberland 89.7 is proud to serve our community. We are winners of the Business Achievement Award in Communications and Technology. Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
All righty, welcome back to Northumberland 89.7. You're listening to The Drive Time. It's Wednesday, it's after 6, and we ask you, the listeners, to consider this. And we're talking to Lambert Reed right now, who is a permanent resident now in Canada and a migrant worker who came to Canada 35 years ago, 1982. Was his first season here, and he's been back and forth ever since. And as we discovered during the break, he spent most of his time here, actually, about 8 months out of the year, living in Canada. And
yes.
But you were here during the good times.
Oh, yes.
From spring till the fall.
Exactly.
And you spent your winters in Jamaica.
In Jamaica, yes.
I know snowbirds that are envious of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested, though, in that first year. What are some of the big memories that you have of that first season that you worked up here? Anything that really stands out other than those first days?
Yes, it was exciting because it's the first time you're away from home, and when we come shopping, there are things we see that we never seen before.
Like what?
Like a nice, but then, you know, you'd buy a nice tape recorder and you'd buy some nice clothes and you want to grab every little thing and say, oh, this is for my mama, or this is for my daughter, or this is for my brother, or this is for, because you know the struggle that you leave behind, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And the things you can get now that you couldn't really afford it back home. So you try to get every little thing, and you buy a suitcase, and you start to put this in there and put that in there,
right.
And, mm-hmm. and get every little thing together. So,
So you would take back this suitcase. How much money would you keep for yourself, and how much would you send back?
Well, that first year, to be honest, I spent like crazy, because when I go home that year, all I got in my pocket was $100. I remember I with $100.
Wow.
Yes. And everything else was spent.
Yeah. Then you only pay like maybe 105 Canadian for the 100 US. But in Jamaica, you would get more for the US then. So that's why we changed the money from before we get home to US dollars.
Absolutely.
And you would have taken home this suitcase full of
stuff
for your
family. Yes.
When did you make the transition then from doing that kind of thing to sending back money, where you saw the money being more important?
Well, we always been sending money to my family, because back then my family didn't start it until about a few years later,
Mm-hmm.
I got a family and start to get kids, and and what have you. But when I first started, it wasn't, I didn't have a really,
so
just my siblings and my dad and my mom. Well, my mom passed away before I started traveling. Yes. Yeah, so
now sending things back to Jamaica, things that, you know, I mean, you always hear stories about people sending back toilet paper. A friend of mine, her mother, her aunt actually was the Minister for Health in Jamaica. And she used to say, okay, I will send you Blue Mountain coffee. You send me toilet paper.
Yes. And even now, we still, the guys them still do it, eh? Like, they will make a big wooden crate, and they will pack it right full of stuff, and some will take, like, tools, because they're maybe a carpenter or a mason back home, or maybe a plumber or whatever profession, whatever trade they got. And they would try to get tools here. That's when they go back home. They can help themselves to make an honest living back there and help their family.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we would try to send back a lot of things that we can afford to buy back there, and like a TV. I remember when I started traveling here, I didn't have a TV back home. I didn't have a television.
Right.
I didn't have a fridge in the house.
Wow.
And
so what I'm hearing here is two lifestyles. You've got to basically fund two lifestyles. You got to fund your life here.
Yes.
But at the same time, you're thinking about, okay, I'm not here forever. I'm going to be going back home.
Exactly.
What am I doing when I get home? And making sure that when you get back home, when you get off the plane, that you've got, you know, the tools to do a bricklaying if you're a mason or a carpenter. So you're basically working here to support two lives.
Two lives, yes.
That's got to be crazy.
It's crazy. And you got a short time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you got a short time to do it. And the good thing back there, though, the government, they took, like, I think it's 25% from your salary. They call it a compulsory saving. And they would take that money and they would send it back to Jamaica in the bank. So when you go back home, you could have that money. You could have accessed that money.
Wow. Okay. So you say when you went home with $100 US, was this money there?
There was money there. But the dollar wasn't much there.
No, exactly.
So the first time I remember I go and collect my compulsory saving, I get 427 Jamaican dollars.
Wow. And which doesn't go very far.
No. Well, back then it was better than now. You know, the currency was not that weak as now.
Right.
But that was my saving that year, 1982, $427.
And what sort of an impact did it have on your family? Can you describe the difference?
Well, everyone was so happy when you get home, you know, because at least you brought something for them. You brought a pair of shoes, or you brought a pair of slippers, or a nice shirt. I remember I brought a nice work suit for my dad because he was a farmer, and a nice felt hat and stuff like that. And, you know, everyone was so happy to see it. It's so warming when you get back home and see the warm welcome you get, and everybody was so excited. And you can help them even for that week or that moment to, you know, be happy and have something, you know, to enjoy.
Well, and it wasn't just you. It was your brothers doing this as well, right? You had two other brothers that were doing this?
Yes, I got two other brothers.
Were they coming up here as well, or were they sent somewhere else?
Oh, they sent somewhere else.
Okay.
Yeah, we never see each other until we go back home.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was it like? What were the working conditions like? Can you describe what a typical day might be for you, or some of the typical things that you would do when you were working in the orchards?
Well, it's, to be honest, it's not an easy work. It's hard work, and you got to work because you have a thing that they call regress. If you don't work all day, employer are not going to send back for you next year. And you don't want that to happen, so you will overdo it. Even when you're tired, you will still push on.
Right.
Because you know the difference, and you want to come here to work, so you would do the extra mile. You go the extra mile to make sure you had a good day's working, so the employer can approve of you, and next year he send down a regress for you.
Well, do you live with that sort of in the back of your mind the whole time you're working there?
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, you were there for 35 years. Mm-hmm. Was that something that was in the back of your mind the whole time?
Well, no, after a while, and you get in the routine and everything, and your employer start to send back for you ever here now.
Right.
Then you don't worry about that so much, but you still have to work.
Is that a threat, though, for some of the migrant workers that come up here?
It is a big threat.
Is that something that sort of motivates you? I guess what I'm saying is it hanging over your head sort of a sword of Damocles, right?
It sure does. And they hold it over you. While if you do something, or if I will send you home. I will put you on the next flight, and I will send you home, and you won't be coming back next year and what have you.
Wow.
So just to make this even more real, is back on July 27th, in the Globe and Mail, there was a story about a farmer who sent two migrant workers home because they claimed there was no more work. And those people, they just lose all that extra income. They have to get on a plane. They're immediately shipped back to where they came from. And it's interesting because the farmer justified it by just saying, you know, it was a cucumber asparagus operation. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, we're done. The harvest.
But the workers themselves alleged that it was because they had complained about something.
That's right.
And is that something that migrant workers have to kind of hold? I mean, do you feel like you can't complain?
So, yeah, you can. Sometimes you'll see things and you want to talk about it and you have to just swallow and spit and put up with the condition. Not because you really want to, but you're left with no choice. You know, you just have to put up with it because you want to come and work and you want the opportunity, so you don't want to do anything to jeopardize it, even though you know it's not right. Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing would lead to abuses, though. I mean, that wasn't your experience, so you didn't see situations where people were being abused, or did you? Did you see situations yourself in that time? I mean, we're not mentioning any farms or any of the operations you may have worked at or whatever, but, I mean, the that's a genuine concern. I mean, one of the things we've talked about, and I know other people have talked about this too, when they see migrant workers, they come in on the red bus or whatever from wherever the operation is.
Yeah, or the yellow bus and, you know.
Whatever the school bus is at the grocery store, and they see the migrant workers. And a lot of people have said to me, I remember when I was running the Bean downtown, you know, you wonder, you know, are people being exploited? Are they being exploited? Are they being treated well? And I guess the question I have for you is, did you ever feel like you were being exploited?
Well, lots of time, because even recently, the other day, to be honest, I went to the to KFC to purchase some chicken. And the lady said, look, we don't have any chicken right now. We only have 8 pieces of chicken. You want it or you want to wait 8 minutes for the chicken to ready? And I said, okay, I'll take whatever you got. I'll take it. And then when she served the chicken to me, she gonna tell me that, you want to wait another 5 minutes because this is 8 crappy pieces of chicken. I said, you could have told me that when you told me that you only have 8 pieces of chicken. And then I could make the decision there and then whether I want it, yes or no.
Yeah.
And by saying that, you know what she said to me? Oh, I'm going to call the police on you if you don't leave the store. I said, I'm a customer here. I'm not abusing you. I'm not saying anything that's wrong. All I'm saying, you could have told me that.
Yeah.
So I could have made the decision there and then whether I want the chicken, yes or no. And she told me if I don't leave the store, she's going to call the police on me. I said, you feel free. Go ahead. Call the police.
Please do, yeah.
Because I don't see where I do anything which is wrong.
Right.
And just, you know, so to speak, these are things that, I mean, you know, from time to time you face in town and with your workplace and everything, and you just have to just put up with certain things, even though, you know, it's not right.
Now, is that the same experience your brothers have had? I mean, I guess the question then leaps to mind is, are your brothers still doing this?
No.
How long did they last?
He didn't last as long as me.
Okay.
Because there was actually a meeting. There was something they disagree with, and they all planned to talk about it. And the morning when they're supposed to meet with the employer, everybody backed out on him.
Oh, boy.
So, and he looked like the bad weed.
Well, yeah.
So the next year,
He didn't come back. So part of the concern is there solidarity among the workers when there is a situation of crisis?
Situation. So you, like one friend told me back years ago, if you have something to say to your employer, if you can say it by yourself, don't say it at all. Don't say it at all.
Wow. On that note, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, more of our conversation. We promise, Daniel, we'll ask you a question. This is just, I'm fascinated by this. You are listening to Canada's only holistic political chat. This is The Drive Time on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. It's Tuesday. We ask you, the listeners, to consider this.
Hey, Northumberland. Jumpin' Jody here, inviting you to join me for the Saturday Morning Confusion. Heard every Saturday from 9 till noon. I'll be playing the best music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and don't miss my segment of things that make you go, hmm. That's Saturday Morning Confusion, 9 to 12, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
It's Saturday Morning Confusion. If you think you can sleep, it's illusion. This is Allison Houston from Port Hope Public Library, your destination for inspiration, imagination, and there's lots of free fun at the Mary J. Benson branch of your public library. The library launches the TD Summer Reading Club and rounds out the summer with a comic magic show by Peter Meany on August 24th at 11 a.m. Family activity days run Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. featuring Canada's birthday, pet care, bird watching, and stargazing. Spend a quiet Wednesday afternoon enjoying a movie matinee each week at 1 p.m. with Lego Batman, Belle, and the Boss Baby up on the big screen. Everyone's invited to the library Thursday mornings at 11 a.m. for a family story time and craft. Each week, children can get crafty at the Garden Hill branch with new activities each Wednesday afternoon. Any student that needs some extra help with reading, French, or math can benefit from the summer tutoring program. For details about programs and other library information, visit www.phpl.ca, call 905-885-4712, and find the library on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Want to learn about radio and have fun working with a group of dedicated and enthusiastic people? Consider volunteering with us. To find out how, go to info@northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the broadcast. Today, our guest in the studio, Lambert Reed, who was a migrant worker, and I guess you're still working as a migrant. Were you still working as a migrant worker?
No.
You're not a migrant anymore. I guess you're a permanent resident.
Yes.
Did you find, I guess you managed to find another job somewhere else locally.
So yes, I do.
Okay, well, we don't necessarily want to plug your current employer, although we might if time allows later on. Well, Daniel, now one of the, we're going to bring Daniel into the conversation. He's a community outreach officer for Horizons of Friendship, and you spend a lot of your time dealing with migrant workers. You've talked about some concerns, the fact that workers really can't raise concerns with their employers. If they do, there's a good chance that they may not be asked back. How genuine is the concern then for migrant workers when it comes to complaints? I mean, you know, you talked about swallowing your spit. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much do workers have to go through in your experience, Daniel? How many times do people have to swallow their spit?
I think it's something that's definitely a concern of migrant workers having to just not speak up in the workplace, not say no to dangerous work, for example.
Yeah.
And it also I also see that it sort of depends on from employer to employer. Right. I know some workers who work on some farms here in Northumberland County, they have a relationship with their boss of like mutual respect and understanding. And they're able to have that conversation of, you know, I don't like the work I'm doing, or I don't like the, you know, I wish I could have gloves or whatever the case is. They have that sort of relationship where there's mutual respect. Right. And then there's other employers. Right. That, you know, there isn't necessarily that relationship, or they're not, that maybe the employer isn't as susceptible to, you know, listening to complaints, right? And so then in that case, a migrant worker would have to, you know, swallow their spit and, you know, just, you know, suck it up, I guess, right?
Is there any of the services, though, that we provide in the county? I know you provide a number of services. Is there any services that you provide locally that can help these people? Are there avenues that can be taken? Is there advocacy work that can be done to improve these conditions? Because
I mean, the best we could do really is we work very closely with Teresa Williams at the Northumberland Community Legal Center. So if there is a case where, you know, there's a serious legal issue involved, there's you know, an issue of legality, we can get her involved and we can see if we can mediate the situation. There's also sometimes workers will ask me to see if I can, they'll tell me, you know, what the complaint is, and then I'll bring it to the employer. So it kind of takes that burden off them having to do it, so they can just put that burden on me.
And, well, you know, but you have to do it in a way that doesn't identify that person.
Exactly,
too,
yeah. Right? So I have to be very discreet and diplomatic about how I do it, right? And so I've had to do that a number of times, and for the most part, you know, nobody yells at me for doing that, because, I mean, really, what are you going to do? But I try to do my best to mediate between the employer and the employee, which is the migrant worker, right?
How frustrating is it for you, though? Because, I mean, we have laws in this province, right? I mean, you can refuse to work in dangerous situations. It's the law in the province of Ontario. Mm-hmm. If your employer is asking you to do something that requires safety equipment and they're not willing to provide it, it's the law in Ontario that they have to provide that.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly.
But we're seeing situations, we've heard situations where when one is a migrant worker, that sometimes they play fast and pretty loose with the rules. I mean, has that been your experience,
yes.
Lambert?
Yes.
So what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, like, and it's unfortunate. I know there are cases, I think this year and last year as well, where migrant workers have died on the job,
yes.
Right? They've got caught in machinery and whatever the case is, and, you know, those there's issues before the court and in those cases. But, you know, there is serious potential for, you know, farm equipment can be dangerous, right? And so, you know, skirting the laws or, you know, neglecting, you know, providing training or equipment for migrant workers is a clear danger, right? And so it is a difficult situation, especially, you know, if it's an employer that, you know, isn't willing to listen to criticism, doesn't deal well with criticism, for example, or if there's a bad relationship between the employees and the employer, it can be, you know, a difficult situation when there's, you know, heavy machinery involved, right?
So those accidents are those in Northumberland or are those elsewhere in the province?
They're elsewhere in the province. I've seen them. I think one was out in Leamington,
yeah.
Where a worker got caught in like a plower kind of thing, and mm-hmm. I believe he died as a result.
Well, I just got a message from one of our listeners out there who says that I made some fast friends with some Jamaicans that worked at the same farm for the last 3 years. He's not naming what farm it is, obviously. And he says the stories I have by them is that the employers were horrendous. Obviously, that's not something they can tell anyone in public. But, I mean, that's what we hear, right? I mean, we always hear that, you know, if you're lucky enough to be an employee that they get along with or that for some reason they've taken a shine to you, then you get treated well. But if you're not, if you're like the rest of the other people who work on the farm, there's a good chance that they could care less one way or the other how you are. And I'm getting the impression you've met other local migrant workers who've worked at other farms.
Oh, yes.
And is that similar to what you've heard from other migrant workers? Well, again, we don't want to name any of the farms locally or whatever. We're not here to shame anybody. But
you heard it every day. And I would just say, I mean, if an employer, the best result you can get from your employee, just be one-on-one with them. Just be honest with them, be good to them.
Right.
And you can get everything out of them.
Well, you know, it's funny because I mentioned that earlier today. I was talking about workers and I was talking about how, you know, if you treat your worker fair,
yes.
if you pay them well,
yes.
if you build a relationship, they are going to produce the best product.
The best product you can ever have.
But if you treat your workers like crap, you're going to get bad production.
Everybody going to draw their foot.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
I'm interested, though, in talking maybe a bit more about you and your experience.
Yes.
Because you raised a family.
Yes.
Where you were separated from them 8 months of the year.
Yes.
Can you describe what that was like as your children were growing up and with your wife?
Oh, yeah. The children, you know, it was very hard for me at the time because, I mean, you know, they actually grown up not seeing daddy. And when they heard I was coming home and I call and say, look, I'm coming home next month or this week or so, mm-hmm. they're so happy and they're so excited. And they all want to come to the airport to see daddy because it's been like 8 months they haven't seen daddy. And I mean, you know, I mean, I send gifts and I buy everything to make them happy and I ship home stuff, but it's still not enough because your present is not there.
Now, how many children do you have?
I got four kids.
Four kids?
Two boys and two girls.
Two boys and two girls.
Yes.
How old are they now?
The youngest is 26, going 27, and the oldest is 31,
and
going
32. What do they do?
Well, my youngest, the two boys are engineer. And the oldest girl, she's a customer officer at the airport. And my youngest daughter, she's a doctor.
Now, you gave them that education.
Exactly.
Through the wages that you earned here.
I earned here on the farm.
That's
wow.
incredible.
Yes.
Describe what that's like. I mean, I'm just trying to wrap my head around
how
that.
How did you manage to do that?
At the same time, you have to try to build a little house and build a shelter for them too as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you grow up, you doesn't get a silver spoon in your hand or in your mouth or whatever. So you have to strive for everything that you achieve because
yes.
you have to try to buy a couple sheets of zinc, a couple piece of board, and try to erect a little building and call it your home and try to make to shelter your kids them. At the same time, you have to pay school fee, you have to get school uniform, and you have to get everything. And
wow.
with such little money and little time, you have to stretch it really far and to, you know, try to cover all these grounds.
And yeah, and so now you have two sons that are professional engineers.
Yes.
You have a daughter who's a doctor.
Yes.
and another doctor who works at the border.
Or at a custom officer.
As a custom officer.
Yes.
So very good jobs by any standard.
Exactly.
Right?
And they're proud of that, and I'm proud of them, too.
Wow. No, because this totally flies in the face of what you hear from people out there who are completely clueless about, these people come here, they take the good jobs, they don't do anything, they're not productive members of society. Here you have built a legacy. You've built a legacy of education.
Yes.
You've built a legacy of a strong work ethic.
And I got a beautiful home right now in Jamaica, and I got a store, a convenience store.
Really?
Yes, in Jamaica right now.
Wow.
As we speak. I do farming. I still do farming because I love farming. I grow chicken. I grow pigs. And I still have a nephew down there that's taking care of all these things for me. And I still, right now, got about 3-barrel pack with stuff to send for my nephews and my nieces and my sister down there and all of that. So I'm still helping.
It's amazing.
In whatever way I can.
Well,
I don't forget my family.
No, I got to say, yours is an incredible story. We're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up with Lambert Reed and Daniel Quesada. Again, you know what? When you see a migrant worker at the grocery store, wherever it is, whether it's the store in Brighton or Cobourg or Port Hope, remember, there's a lot more to just surface here when we're talking about people who come and build a future for themselves and their families by coming here to do menial labor. We'll be back.
Long & McQuaid Musical Instruments are Canada's music experts. Ask our knowledgeable staff about Long & McQuaid's large selection of instruments and accessories. Purchase, rent, or rent to own all at unbeatable rates. And don't forget to check out their Music Lesson Center, featuring qualified teachers and private instructions for all ages, levels, and styles. Go to long-mcquaid.com to find out more.
Tune in to Modern Jazz Today, a weekly radio show that focuses on today's jazz improvisers and creators, cutting their teeth and cutting the edge of sound. Join us as we explore what's new, what's groundbreaking, and where it's happening. Sunday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
In your face. All over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7.
Northumberland89.7.ca.
We're all leaving.
All right, we're live again, kids. We're back. The audience is like, what the hell are they doing? We're having a conversation during the break, and we're not going to get into it on the air because we don't want to get in trouble. I'm sure the lawyers are listening.
So I'm really interested, though, just in how the relationships build. You've done this for so long.
Yeah.
Have you made friends with the other workers? Have those lasted more than a season? And what kinds of relationships have you developed over the time working with these other people?
Well, I develop a good relationship with them because I try my endeavor best to see that they are okay and they're happy. And I'm the kind of person that would go the extra mile just to make sure the guy is okay or whoever is there is okay. I would take money out of my pocket and I would buy stuff, buy some chicken and buy some beer and put on a little party and call all of them together and we sit down and we have a beer and we add a piece of jerk chicken and we heat and we buy a cake or whatever. And we get together. I do that all the time with my money.
So what difference does it make, or has it made any kind of difference, to have somebody doing the kind of work that Horizons of Friendship is facilitating by having a migrant worker coordinator? Has it made any difference? Does it make a difference?
Well, it make a difference because from time to time, I mean, the friendship or the relationship that they develop with the workers and they try to help the workers and see the workers, they don't give them like a good jacket or some work clothes, or they put on a party or a dinner for them, and it is good because at least the workers, they can come out and listen to some music or and talk to somebody new and, and have a healing out away from work, and it's really good. It's helped them. It's good mentally and everything. it's really good, you know.
And what about the Thursday nights? I know when they have the legal help there and the doctors and those kinds of things. What kind of a difference does that make to the workers?
It's tremendously good. It's really good because, I mean, some of the guys, during the week, they really don't even have time to even go see the doctor if something wrong with them. And some of them, to be honest, some of them are shy, so they're... A doctor's right there, and they can go with them one-on-one, and it's good. So most of them go, and they explain their situation and whatever is wrong, and, you know, and stuff like that. So it's really good. It's a really, really good...
Well, I guess the last thing I want to ask you, because this unfortunately will be our last question, is do you see yourself as an elder, as a mentor to the younger guys that are coming into the farm that you're working on? I mean, you've been there for a long, long time. As you say, the boss used to say, you know, hey, ask Greedy, he'll help you out here. I mean, how has that made you feel? I mean, that's got to add a little something to doing the job for you, right?
Oh, yeah. It's made me feel, as a person, I felt good because at least I can help my fellow men and my fellow men, I can help them along the way and teach them something and say, well, this is how we do it. And a new guy come and you can teach him and say, this is how you pick the apples or this is how you do this job and this is how you go about this job and you help them along the way, you know?
Yeah.
And learn and watch and don't be too jumpy and too acy and learn it because it's not a overnight thing, you know? It's something you got to learn and you know?
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I want to thank you very much. I want to wish you good luck.
Thank you. You're
living here in Colebrook, so we may run into one another. Who knows?
That's right.
Our guests in the studio have been Daniel Cassata. He's a community outreach officer for Horizons of Friendship, and also Lambert Reed, who was a 35-year regular migrant worker from Jamaica, coming up here for 35 years, built a life for his family, his kids, who are now professionals. And again, I want to thank you very much for coming in, Lambert.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
That. Thanks to Rob Washburn for our regular installment. This is where we ask you, listeners, I hope you've come away from this conversation a little more enlightened to the plight and the lives of some of the migrant workers that you're going to run into right up till November, probably, here in Northumberland County. Here's Jimmy Cliff, The Harder They Come.
The Harder They Go.
On Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. And a reminder, listeners, we don't write the world at Truly Local Radio, but we do bring it to you each and every day. I'm Dave Glover. Thanks for joining us.
The harder they come, the harder they'll fall, one and all. say no.